out with me, Flame, which hither ye have brought from regions where I reign. Ye fools and priests, I spit upon your fire.
Hello, how do you do? This is a show from Radio. We're a group of stations bringing new and forgotten ways of making radio to our listeners. Each week, we give artists the challenge to make radio that works across the whole of Europe and beyond. Artists, get on with it.
Hi there. You're with Mara Mariko for Kashmir Radio. Good evening to all who've tuned into this very special session for Radiophonic Spaces at AKV, or Haus der Kultur und der Welt in Berlin, and for Radio FM, by Reboot FM, with Kashmir Radio as guest. This is the very first short bit where I talk freely, but as soon as we go into the program, the entire show will be made up of quotes or found texts on the internet. The hyperlink script will be available on the website after the fact.
So, a little about Kashmir. Kashmir Radio is a not-for-profit community experimental radio station based in Lichtenberg, Berlin. It is volunteer-run and organized. This means it requires a little bit more effort from everyone to help make the operation run smoothly. The ambition of the station is to preserve and further radio and broadcasting practices by playing with the plasticity and malleability of the medium. We do this by both honoring and challenging its inherent qualities. It is both a physical station open to the public and an online radio. It has regular shows, yet opens itself up to extended and one-off events. It features extended generative music performances and installations at the same time as working within radio's typical durations. In short, it is an attempt to enhance and celebrate the performative, social and informative power of radio that we believe lies within the form itself.
On the internet. Nobody knows you're a dog.
On the internet, nobody knows you're a dog.
On the internet, nobody knows you're a dog.
You're a dog on the internet. Nobody knows.
On the internet, nobody knows. You're a dog.
On the internet, nobody knows you're a dog.
On the internet, nobody knows you're a dog.
You're a dog nobody knows on the internet.
So let's begin with a round of introductions. Today we will be discussing identity, anonymity and what that might mean for our privacy. My name is Rosie and I am a history teacher from Bath. Who would like to go next?
I'm Tess. I sell books in a bookstore in Sydney, Australia. My passion is obviously reading, and I also enjoy traveling and meeting new people from around the globe.
I'm Fiona. I'm a contemporary literature student at a university in Florida. I love doing something creative that might be using Photoshop, painting and drawing in the physical world, gardening, which I can do year-round in Florida, baking and cooking. I also love writing little stories and illustrating them, making pretty cards for my friends and often learning new things in a wide field of interests. I sure would love to have 100 hours every day.
Hi, I'm Vina. I'm listening to music. I listen to it practically all day long, either in the background to relax, or right up front and loud to enjoy it if nothing else is going on. I even have it playing while I'm doing homework. That way I can't hear the TV and get distracted, and I can actually concentrate better. This is just a recent development, though, which is weird. I used to rarely listen to music, except for playing classical music on the piano and sometimes every so often listening to it.
I eat my peas with honey. I've done it all my life. It makes the peas taste funny, but it keeps them on the knife. My name is Harry, so I'll dive straight in. We'll begin by discussing anonymity, identity and their implications for online privacy. Then we will move on to anonymity as a system for undermining structures of power. And the last part we'll discuss how we should be looking to use these mirrors and masks to our advantage, or not. Book 2 of Plato's Republic tells the story of a Lydian shepherd who stumbles upon the ancient ring of Gyges while minding his flock. Fiddling with the ring one day, the shepherd discovers its magical power to render him invisible. As the story goes, the protagonist uses his newly found power to gain secret access to the castle, where he ultimately kills the king and overthrows the kingdom. Fundamentally, the ring provides the shepherd with an unusual opportunity to move through the halls of power without being tied to his public identity or his personal history. It also provided Plato with a narrative device to address a classic question known to philosophers as the immoralist's challenge. Why be moral if one can act otherwise with impunity?
Great opening question. Facebook and Google want to link online and offline personas, while 4chan and other social sites prefer people to play with the freedom of pseudonyms. Before Facebook and Google became the megaliths of the web, the most famous online adage was, "On the internet, no one knows you're a dog." It seems the days when people were allowed to be dogs is coming to a close. The old web, a place where identity could remain separate from real life, is rapidly disappearing from the computer screen.
According to Sheryl Sandberg, Facebook's chief operating officer, and Richard Allen, its director of policy in Europe, a critical mass of people only want online interactions supported by authentic identity. And this, say critics, will have irrevocable effects on the openness of the web. To move through the halls of power without the pursuit of authenticity is creeping into the heart of most social media models, and in the current internet landscape is playing an important role in how we engage with one another and with web content. Within this model, authentic identity is non-anonymous. Facebook profiles and Google IDs are tied to a person's real name and real connections, and increasingly to their activities across cyberspace.
Facebook also believes authenticity is linked to a person's photo stream, which is why it has just paid $1 BN for the photo sharing service Instagram. Pictures speak of thousands of words. Immigration officials will ask to see a photo album to see if the relationship is genuine. It's a very instinctive and powerful way to confirm authentic identity.
All you have to give up is your illusions, not any of your privacy. Your data is safer with me than with you, believe me. The privacy you're concerned about is largely an illusion.
I completely disagree. I would not call what you have on Facebook authentic identity. Mark and Sheryl have gone out and said that identity is authenticity, that you are online who you are offline, and to have multiple identities is lacking in integrity. I think that's nuts. We went from a web that was interest-driven, and then we transitioned into a web where the connections were in person, real-life friendship relationships. Individuals are multifaceted. Identity is prismatic, and communities like 4chan exist as a holdover from the interest-driven web.
This is one of the reasons why network architects and online identity can be as permanent as an offline one. Pseudonymous users often identify themselves in different social networks using the same account name. But because their handles aren't based on real names, they can deliberately delineate their identity accordingly, and reassert anonymity if they wish. Psychologists argue that this is valuable for the development of a sense of who one is, who one can be, and how one fits into different contexts. This kind of activity is allowed even in countries where social network account holders are required to register for a service using a national ID, as in South Korea and China. Their online public identities are still fabrications. Even with this explicit link with the state, when users are aware that their activities online are traceable, identity play continues.
Yet I really do think the ability to be anonymous is increasingly important because it gives people control, it lets them be creative, it lets them figure out their identity and explore what they want to do, or to research topics that aren't necessarily them and may not want tied to their real name for perpetuity. The ability to forget, to start over is important. Maybe you just got divorced. Maybe you just came out of rehab and you want to start over. As soon as you log into a Gmail account, you start getting ads for the drug rehab you want to forget. If you're in a real name environment, such as Facebook, unless you actually physically change your name and your friends, you're thrown right back into your old life.
Who are you? Who? I woke up in a Soho doorway. A policeman knew my name. He said, you can go sleep at home tonight if you can get up and walk away. I staggered back to the underground and the breeze blew back my hair. I remember throwing punches around and preaching from my chair.
Well, who are you? Who are you? Who?
Well, who are you?
I really wanna know.
Who
are you?
Who? I really wanna know.
Who
are you?
Tell me.
Who
are you?
Tell me.
Who are you?
Who are you?
Who?
Cause I really cause I really wanna know. Who are you?
Who are you?
Who?
We now have a grasp on the pros and cons of anonymity. Now we want to ask how this can be mobilized to break down structures of power, for instance for the LGBTQ community and feminisms.
We defend the right to be anonymous and reject all claims to restrict anonymity online. Anonymity enables our freedom of expression online, particularly when it comes to breaking taboos of sexuality and heteronormativity, experimenting with gender identity, and enabling safety for women and queer persons affected by discrimination. Well, for most of history, Anonymous was a woman. Anonymity has always supported women and queers in telling the difficult stories that could get them into trouble. But so crucial were those storytellers to break the taboos around gender, sex, and sexuality. Today, the right to be anonymous is under threat. Governments don't like it. Corporations hate it. And so a discourse is promoted around linking anonymity to crime and criminalizing anonymity in order to make the internet safer from trolls, especially for women. But as feminists, we know that we cannot give up our right to be anonymous for an illusion of safety. We must fight for the policies and tools that protect anonymity and pseudonymity. New technologies and online spaces have played an important role in the global women's movement. At the same time, however, they have also produced challenges, namely, new forms of violence against women and girls. The very tools and platforms that embolden women's rights activists are being used against them, in a deliberate attempt to silence them.
How must feminism take on the challenge of a datafied world? How should we understand the self and its social ID in this conjuncture, in feminist terms? The rise of the sharing economy obfuscates the materiality of third world labor upon which the edifice of network capitalism stands. Appealing as it does to the virtue of the responsible consumer, who shares taxis and gives up his couch, it represents a paradoxically interdependent society of altruistic strangers. Datafied connectivity overlooks the fact that online communication/production depends on economic activities, mining, microchip and rare earth production that, as presently organized, are extremely destructive, socially and ecologically, throttling women's local ecosystems and exploiting their bodies. By fetishizing affect and thus skirting the question of the reproduction of everyday life, it takes reproductive work back into the world of mystification, suggesting that reproducing people is just a matter of producing emotions and feelings.
Under the superpanopticon marking our digital existence, subjects are produced by grids of surveillance, that is, the discourse of databases that call upon dispersed and diverse identities, each of which arises in transactions online. Their embodied counterparts may not even be aware of the existence of these data subjects, and those subjects may not even resemble her in being and becoming that which she is called upon to be. From I am and I like to you are and you alike, both by powerful corporations and the state apparatus, the surveillance subject is disciplined by the fragmentation of her digitalized identities. Just think of Facebook's manipulation of user choice through its newsfeed algorithm, or the targeted surveillance of the reproductive behavior of single mothers through welfare regimes. Databases, in both instances, nudge remote management of behavior.
Personalized connectivity is predicated upon an egocentric model of sociality. The greed for data drives individuals to become locked in themselves. Gazing enviously at others' self-worth is increasingly about relative popularity, the likes one gets on social media, and consequently, the self-policing one must do for greater and greater desirability. As Morozov astutely observes, our voluntary surrender of personal data has nothing to do with public good. We're too cheap not to use free services subsidized by advertising. Or we want to track our fitness and diet, and then we sell the data.
These systems and tools are critical to our society by providing a free and open internet for people across different parts of the world. How can we resolve these misconceptions going forward? The first step lies in understanding what anonymity systems provide and how they operate. Users don't necessarily need to understand all the details, but learning how systems like Tor work will help prevent some misconceptions. This responsibility does not rely solely on the user, but also on the people that make these systems. Technologists, researchers, and developers need to make their systems usable and provide helpful documentation to educate their users. These systems and tools are critical to our society by providing a free and open internet for people across different parts of the world.
I don't think internet anonymity means what you think it means.
Even to this day,
in the past few years, usage statistics for anonymity systems and tools have skyrocketed. This phenomenon can be seen most clearly immediately following the Snowden revelations in 2013's activities. In response, many internet users rushed to adopt privacy-enhancing technologies like encryption, virtual private networks. And while government surveillance is a highly publicized reason for using these technologies, privacy benefits
the leadership of Western Yorkshire schools have been called into question following allegations with the Syrian refugee trial and calls for answers of the very knowledge that the teenager may have been subjected to years of abuse and
I'm going to go to the next one.